everybody. Natalia, are you there?
Hi, Amanda. I'm here. Good to hear your voice. Hi.
You too. Let's go ahead and get started. We have a good group on the call.
Welcome everybody.
Yeah.
Great. I hope they ask lots of questions today.
I know, me too. There's some questions that I pulled from the board that we can talk about. And also, if you are at your computer, you can be on the dashboard. It comes in the email, the conference reminder, so you can actually type in questions to us, and I have that on, so we can see those and answer questions that way, too. Do we want to start with anything, Natalia?
You know, just a couple things came to me before the call that I thought it was always good reminding myself as a parent, and not just each other, but just as we are like the red tent here, a circle of family leaders. it's just a way to check your choices. Parents often wonder, am I making the right choice? How do I make the right choice? How do I know I'm making the right choice? Well, our job as parents is to love, protect, and support the growth of our kids. So it's an easy go-to to love, protect, and support the growth of the kids. And so all we have to ask ourselves, we know what things do that. And I brought them down to five basic things that will ensure that. The first one, of course, is love, unconditional love. The second is security, a sense of security. The third is a sense of freedom. And the last two are kind of the children of love, security, and freedom, and they are creativity and flexibility. So we know our choices are good choices if we're doing our job to protect, love, and support their growth, which means that the choices we make will result in greater love, greater security, greater freedom, creativity, and flexibility. And that's, I think, as good a map as any for ensuring that we do our job as per its definition. And then there's what I call to create a little contrast, the debilitating limitations that can be put onto kids. And those will just eradicate any sense of love, freedom, security, creativity, and flexibility. And those come from, and to create some context here, they're especially impactful on kids because of the nature of babies and children, which is receptive. They're very, very receptive, and they're meant to be receptive because they're meant to take in a lot of information, so they can use that information to turn into adults, into really productive, functional adults, ideally. That's how the design was created or why the design was created. But because of that nature, the egg-like receptivity nature of babies and kids, they're extremely easy to program. So these debilitating limitations start with the subconscious programming that gets placed on them into them from all the external family ways, meaning things outside the family, from the media and the community. And then there's the social, the subconscious programming of the family stories and the life deteriorating habits and lifestyle from the family, which goes very, very deep and gets projected onto kids from a very young age. So if we can heal these things ourselves and we can redirect our energies to empower everything that is harmonious and life-generating in our lives, we'll make sure we can ensure that we're not projecting it onto our kids, and then we can make sure we're pulling our kids away from the things that can be debilitating limitations on them and instead not even focusing on that, but energizing the things that will create love, freedom, security, creativity, and flexibility for them. And I think that what Life Force Families is, what Life Force Kids are, what it means, how we know we're going in the right direction. So that's simply just a little template for you to use if you don't already have one. Other than that, I'll hand it over to any questions that are coming in.
Yes. Okay. So if you have questions, go ahead and press 1 on your keypad. Um, And I mean, I would love to hear from the group too. So you said love.
Love, security.
Security.
Freedom.
Freedom.
And then creativity and flexibility, which are kind of...
You know, what's so interesting about that is it's and it's also, you said, protecting the growth of our children. I mean, sometimes it can feel a little paradoxical, I think, for parents. And I've experienced this myself, because there is that desire to protect even the physical safety of the child, right?
Mm-hmm.
But within that, create flexibility and create room for growth and room for exploration, which can feel really hard, because it's sometimes, and I think this all, for me, it boils down to fear. Fear that if we mess up, that something tragic will happen, or if we mess up. So then it's sort of like this overcompensation where it's really tight, you know, it's really controlling, and it's really restrictive.
Mm-hmm.
Or
yeah.
It's really normal and mainstream and, you know, safe. Because mm-hmm. if we don't do it that way, we are there, something really bad's going to happen. You know, we're going to mm-hmm. screw them up for life, or we're going, you know, just things that, you know, these tapes that we as parents have that mm-hmm. obviously probably got in our head when we were the receptive little egg, you know,
right.
Subconsciously. So, you know, I would love to hear from everybody, like, what challenges do you have in actually implementing this kind of ideal scenario with your kids? What stories do you have even that make it really hard to do things in the way that you feel that you know is best for the kids, but it's just kind of scary to do it that way?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be good to hear. And as people are writing in, I just would like to talk about the differences between functional security,
yeah.
which creates rational fear, and
right.
dysfunctional security, which creates irrational fear.
Yes.
And when you can start to differentiate...
That's a huge distinction.
Yeah.
That's a huge
Well, the second one... Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
The irrational fear comes from that social programming, like you were saying, that tape in your head.
Yeah.
So if you could trace it all back, you can figure out which is which.
Yeah. Yeah, which is not always the easiest thing to do, but definitely would result in a different kind of outcome for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I guess
okay.
people could put into categories what they believe a functional security is and a dysfunctional security is, like a dysfunctional security choice versus a functional security choice.
Yeah.
And then might help them trace back.
Mm. Does anyone have that? Does anyone have a thought on functional security and dysfunctional security? If you do, press 2 on your keypad. We'll just talk about that for a sec.
Okay. Or we can phrase it as irrational fear versus rational fear.
Yeah.
Either
okay.
way, it's really the same.
All right. Let's see. Marie? Marie, you have the mic. Or is it Mari? Are you there? We can't hear you. Okay. I don't know if she accidentally put her mic up. I hope I did this right. I think I did. Okay. I'm going to put your hand down. If you want to answer that question again, go ahead and press 2. Anyone that wants to talk about, say it again, irrational versus rational security.
Fear. Yeah.
Fear.
It's the same. And as we're waiting for people to raise their hands, I just wanted to say, I mean, if everyone isn't following the Pelema TV episodes that you're doing, Amanda, they're missing out big time, because they've just been absolutely fantastic. And the last one you had with Natasha was incredible. I mean, they're all just kind of, you know, just more brilliant versions than the other. One after the other, they just get better and better. But they're so topical, and they're so insightful, and I love the way you... you recap all of the points, the takeaways, It's brilliant. So I don't know if you've been getting feedback from this community, but I'm loving it. And
thank you so much. Yeah, there has been feedback from this community, and it's really nice. Yeah, no, it's so funny because whenever any episode, we shot all the episodes, we took all the footage in November, and so I get to relive each episode as we edit and put them out each week. And this last one was Natasha. It was like Jason and I sat down on the couch. We always watch the unedited version first, just one time through. And it was amazing how immediately we got into this amazing conversation about the kids and what we see in them and what how this all was so relevant in our own life. And then even the next day, I think our approach with them was just different. You know, and it's funny because I hang out with Natasha a lot, and I was in the episode with her, but just being reminded of these things all the time, it's really helpful.
It is so helpful. You can't get enough of it. If you're living living in the artificial matrix but are not of it, you can't get enough of hearing the things that resonate with your soul, because all day long you're hearing the cacophony, and you're holding your order out of chaos. So it's so nice to hear order. It's kind of like a great musician that when he hears another great musician, it's like, yes, finally, somebody's just like, remind me that good music exists out there, and that it's and it reminds me to be a better musician myself.
Totally.
So,
And we are going to be offering the opportunity to work even deeper with most of the guests that we've had on the show, which will start in April, and they're called Backstage Passes, and it'll be an opportunity to, you know, dig deep with any of the teachers that resonated with you. And there's going to be an unlimited backstage pass where you can take all the classes for 2 months. And I'm going to be doing a class called Tune In, which is all about accessing a mother's guide to accessing our inner wisdom, which for me is so important because there's so much, you know, cacophony and so many different opinions. And really when it comes down to it, if we can all trust in the guidance within ourselves, then that to me is freedom. And liberation, because it's you always know where to come back to get your guidance. So that will be coming up in April. But thanks, Natalia, for bringing up PaleoMod TV.
No, I mean, it needs to be in front of everyone all the time. if we want to know how to live better, you know. Is anyone writing in?
Not yet. So why don't I go ahead and take some questions from the board that came in. I mean, I can talk about. I've seen what feels to me non-functional. I'm losing the words. Can you say it again?
Dysfunctional security.
Dysfunctional security. Well, that to me would be something like keeping your child in a school that you know isn't right for them, where you know there's other options that would be better for them. But maybe your mother-in-law and your spouse or your, you know, other people in your life are saying that, you know, it's what will happen to that kid. That kid, you know, are they going to be able to get into college? Are they going to be able to get into the right schools next? Are they, you know, it's all those what-ifs that are all totally fear-based. When if you know that there's a situation that's better for your child now, that all those things will work themselves out when they need to. Or discouraging a child from pursuing their passion because you're afraid that they won't be able, again, they won't be able to function in society, they won't be able to get a good, secure job. That, to me, would be dysfunctional security. Or even with the little ones, there's so much of that. It's like, don't touch that, don't do this, don't jump on that, don't, you know, it's that constant, like, you know, just stifling out of fear that they're going to get hurt. And there's a rational fear that they could get hurt. And I think any, you know, logical or, you know, person that's functioning from a pretty healthy space can see, okay, that's getting dangerous right there. And so I need to step in. But there's so, I mean, there's liability concerns. And, you know, so businesses have all these liability concerns. And there's all these these external fears too. So it's sometimes difficult to navigate in the world when you're trying to give your child some space, but that's not always possible. Like we were at the airport going through security, and it's like, okay, that the kids need to be corralled, and there's no room there. You know, there's no room to be to be playing and jumping and stuff. But we don't have to have that kind of environment everywhere all the time. So those for me would be dysfunctional.
Yeah, in a way, with physical rational fear, you can usually depend on your instinct.
Mm-hmm.
It's usually the irrational fear that, where the intellect gets involved.
Yeah.
And that's usually because of all the subconscious programming. So if we bring out our wild mama or wild papa, we pretty much know that we're giving them good security. The other thing I wanted to mention is that you could use this list also backward. So we know that we want to create the security, the freedom, the love, the creativity, and the flexibility, and we can do things to create it. But we could also use this list to go through and say, do I feel like be the wild mama, be the sage grandmother or grandfather, and go through the list and say, does my child have unconditional love? Does my child have a good sense of security, freedom, creativity, and flexibility? And go through each one and think about each one, sit with each one, and maybe you even do like a scale of 1 to 10. Or I suppose there's no level to unconditional love, either your kid has it or doesn't. But it's if they don't, why don't they? Where have I not mirrored unconditional love for them? Where have I not demonstrated unconditional love? Because that's where they would get it or wouldn't get it. So this is something to work on myself so that I can be an example of this, so that I can give this to my child. Where do they not just express freedom, but where do I know they feel limited in their freedom and their ability to express and demonstrate that they really do fully embody the definition of freedom? Same thing. Where does this come from in me? Where does this limitation is? Because, today's kids are all limited just to different degrees. So we project our limitation on them to the degree to which we're limited usually. So if we can identify the limitation, figure out where exactly their cage is. Maybe they're really relatively very, very free. Okay, so what's the outer edge of their cage? How can we let them be even freer and grow even more? Because that's evolution. That's supporting their growth is to grow beyond the confines. Even if the kid next door, his perimeter of freedom would seem incredibly confining to your child, you can't compare. Whatever your child is, he needs to be able to have the freedom to grow beyond that. So we just go through each one and say, well, where is limitation coming from, and how might I be projecting my own limitation? And then by healing myself, I heal my child, or I enable my child to spread his wings broader and grow his roots deeper.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and when you do an exercise like that, again, do your best to keep it out of the intellect and see what happens in your life. So, for example, if you say, okay, if you go through this exercise and you go to the unconditional love one and you realize that maybe your child isn't receiving as much the unconditional love in the way that you would want, when you say, how could I heal this in myself? Where can I do better with that in my own life? It's normally not going to be an intellectual answer. It could be, something that comes as a thought. It could, but it also might show up in experience. So when you ask questions like that, don't be surprised if all of the ways that you are not unconditionally loving people are shown to you very clearly. There's this woman that I heard speak one time, and it was just she told this hilarious story about how she started working on unconditional love in her life, and she worked in a busy office, and people would knock on the door all day. And so there's this one time where she got super frustrated. She's like, in her mind, she's like, I'm working on unconditional love. Can't these people see this? And it was like, oh, okay, like right there. That is where I need to do some healing. You know, it's just this example of the ways that it'll come up. It'll come up the negatively charged emotions that are blocking you from that free-flowing, unconditional love will probably be very clear to you as long as you're looking for it in that way. You know, as long as you're not just forgetting about the exercise that you're trying to do and then, you know, getting into the frustration of what can happen throughout the day. So I just wanted to say that real quick. But then also, Natalia, we had someone that wrote in and said that they couldn't raise their hand for whatever reason. I don't know if other people are experiencing that. But she says, I think it can also be authentic versus inauthentic fears. Authentic would be if you are falling off a cliff. My current inauthentic fear is that something horrible will happen to my son if I'm not watching him constantly. The other day, my husband and I got to the bottom of this, and it's about my lack of trust. That's like an awesome example.
Mm-hmm. That's a really good example.
So true.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a lack of trust. In to me, it's a lack of trust in the universe, and that things are in order, and that you know that we don't have to be in constant fear about our children's safety. You know, it's not healthy for us or for them to be in that hovering mode. And so there is a degree of trust that what is meant to unfold will unfold in the way that it needs to.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. I would add, though, that I think there's an element that parents, I don't want to say especially women, I think because I'm a mother, I can feel the mother energy. So let me just go with that. I think that there is a protective shield that we can put around our family and that we can put around our children. And in order to have the power to do that, we need to be radiant rather than receptive. So we need to be in our spiritual maturity rather than our spiritual infancy. So we go from being, when we're young, we're receptive because we're taking in information. And then when we reach our spiritual maturity, we become radiant. And that radiance is the protective shield. So maybe what is being picked up on in women who have some kind of inauthentic fear, irrational fear, I would call it, around trust is the knowing that there's something more they can be doing. They're just not sure what it is. And by leaving things to chance rather than, you know, we as humans have this power that's been dormant and untapped to create, to create the life we want to have. So if we're not doing that, if we're not really taking ownership, we're not really at the helm, we're not the master of our mind. And so there's still this kind of chaos in our lives and we're not directing everything, then we know there's an extra degree of protection we could be giving our children. And I think if we can rectify that by standing in our power more, doing the things necessary to reach our spiritual maturity, then we can have that shield, that radiation coming from us. And then at that point, then we are, you know, in the interconnected network of life. We've done all we can. We're one with the universe. Then we can really trust the universe. But maybe we haven't done our full part yet if we're just leaving things to chance, to the world of haphazardry.
Yeah, you're in a lose-lose there.
Yeah.
It is a lose-lose when you're not in that situation because being driven by the irrational fear isn't actually going to keep the child any more protected.
Mm-hmm.
It won't because, I mean, the only way to keep the child protected is, like you said, Natalia, to do our role as the mothers to protect the environment in the way that we can, which is definitely very much on the unseen level, and then also to reinforce their own intuition and instinct. And we cannot do that if we're hovering over them all the time. That is only undermining their connection to source.
Right, the micromanaging.
It is totally undervaluing. And I'm going to tell this story not to scare people, but just to highlight this. And we lived on a really a quiet street, but there was at the top of the hill, there was a very blind curve, a very blind turn. And there was a family that lived at the top of the hill. And the mom was, and I'm going to tell the story, and please let me finish it before you, you know, jump to any conclusions. But the mom at the top of the street was so worried all the time that her children would would get hit. I can see why. I mean, it is very valid because it was a blind turn. But it was very much like the kids couldn't play outside, and she was very, very fearful all the time about the kids going out in the street. And, of course, that is exactly what happened. At one point, one of the little girls ran out, and she got hit by a car. And I can't help but think that, you know, the fear, it feeds itself. And so had she taken a different approach, I mean, maybe if she was so fearful to move, I mean, just get out of the situation where it's that, you know, where she can't even allow her children to go outside. And or to really teach her children about how to play safely in that zone. And the only way she could have done that is with the spiritual maturity that you're talking about, Natalia. The only way she could have done that with so much trust and strength and knowing is if she had that herself, which she didn't. And so, I mean, I think it's just, that's an extreme example, but I think all of us, you know, where we have all that fear, we really, and just like the person who wrote in, really need to check ourselves and find out where that's coming from, because it is a lose-lose. It probably won't have that kind of dramatic outcome that I just explained, but it will have some sort of outcome later. You know, fear is always going to breed more fear.
It's interesting because you can almost draw a very simple parallel between fear and pain. You know how we talk about the idea of pain and pleasure being the dialogue of nature communicating with us, and so when we feel pain, we know that it's a call for change. We know it's an alarm bell for change. Well, the same thing with fear. If we have irrational fear, it can be used as an alarm bell for change, as a call to change. So, as you said, with change, either you change the circumstances directly or you change your attitude about them, which is exactly what you said, Amanda. So either she moves or she changes her approach with her kids around this area. And so we can use irrational fear as the Philosopher's Stone, as the fulcrum point for the exact change we need to have happen to make the next step in our life lead to something more life-generating. Mm-hmm. So really, if we can just access by looking very honestly at these irrational fears, identifying them and uncovering what we want to do about them, whether we want to change the situation or make friends with the situation in a better way, we can transform our lives, you know, with that as the communication point.
Totally. It's just like detox symptoms, or just like, you know, symptoms that are showing up in the body that are painful. It's the same. I mean, the fears that are showing up are there to show us something. They're there to they're like little red flags saying, hey, look at me and understand, you know, that you can clear this. You can clean this fear if you do exactly like the woman who wrote in did, and trace it back to where it comes from. And then once you find where it came from, it's never as scary as it seems. Mm-hmm. Never as scary as it seems. It's always the mind, or the, you know, whatever word you want to use, ego mind, or, you know, fear or whatever, just projecting and making it seem so big and insurmountable.
Yeah, your consciousness needs to get above the fear.
Exactly.
And, you know, be able to look down on it and be above it on every level.
Yeah. Okay, so I don't know if people are having a hard time pressing or, you know, raising their hand, but go ahead and press 1 if you do have something that you want to add, or if it's totally unrelated, go ahead and ask any questions that you want at this point. Press 1 on your phone keypad, or you can write in to the dashboard. And Natalia, I'm gonna ask a question from the board, and this comes up so much that, and I know we've covered it a lot of times, but it just continues to come up from people. If people ask me, I see it on the board. It's, you know, it's something that comes up a lot. And it's about, while breastfeeding, is it okay to go into a deeper detox? So I'm ready to start a more aggressive detox, but I'm wondering if it's safe to pursue while still breastfeeding. I would like to do a detox for women protocol. I'm unhappy with the levels that I am craving baked goods and sugar. While they are usually made with high quality ingredients or homemade, I know they are not ideal. I would also like to more deeply clean my system because my daughter struggles with bowel movements and I'd like to possibly get pregnant after she turns 18 months, and I want a little better soil without having to wean her first, if possible.
Mm-hmm.
Is it safe to take a candida supplement in conjunction with detox?
Let's take these one at a time.
Oh, wow. Sorry.
Right. Okay, go ahead and finish it. Okay.
You can't keep track of all that in your head?
I am. I'm up to that point. I'm good. But go ahead and finish it and go back. Okay.
Well, all right. Okay. So is it safe to take a candida supplement in conjunction with detox for women while breastfeeding? I know colonics are imperative. Would I get too many toxins in my blood to be safe for a one-year-old?
Mm-hmm.
She then gives a little bit of background, but I don't know if you really need it. You tell me if you need more background.
No, let me do it generally. If we need the background, we can go to later.
Okay,
So basically, there's so many good reasons to detox while breastfeeding. There's a couple of things, caveats, though. So the most important reason is, you know, so that you can have a better bonding experience with your child because you'll be feeling better, and, you know, and it's so central for mama to feel good, and you'll be inspired and happy because you're getting rid of all this waste that's holding you down on so many levels. And the other adjacent point there is that most women's breast milk is quite toxic. Still, you know, better than giving them formula, but it's fairly toxic. So if you can start cleaning your milk out, the sooner the better, because baby's going to get all the toxicity. We talk about biomass and how what we take in from another species is going to, or from outside ourselves, from the carrot you ate based on how it was grown, or whatever it is, goes into your body. You're taking in its biomass and it's making your biomass. So your biomass has made your milk, which is going to make your baby's biomass. So that's just, you know, if we deep tissue cleanse the waste out, it means that the milk is going to be a different caliber, which means baby's actual biomass, bones, cells, blood, lymph is made of that higher caliber body biomass. So that's all really win-win. The problem is only in if there aren't enough evacuation outlets, enough elimination outlets in the body being employed, and the awakening wakes up toxins that add to the toxins that are already circulating in the bloodstream, and then what goes into the milk is going to be a more, double damage in terms of toxicity in the milk. So what we want to do is, you still want to do the detox, but you want to have all these elimination channels wide open. So you make sure, if you're someone who's not going to do the colonics and enemas, then, you know, that would be unfair, because you'd just be awakening things that aren't being released. They're circulating, they're adding to the bloodstreams, toxicity that's going into your breast milk that's going to go into the baby. So that's, you know, you have to be bold about your elimination, and it's the time to, you know, if the degree to which you would like to intensify your cleanse has to, or your potential cleanse, meaning that you've awakened, has to be the commitment to bowel cleansing needs to be equal to that. Now, it'd be great if you get infrared sauna sweats. Great if you're outside a lot. You're getting lots of alkaline air, and the sun and the elements are magnetizing, you know, a lot of toxins out of you through your lungs, through your skin. That's all good, but it's not enough. So the more you do that, the better. But the bowel cleansing has to really, really be there, because that's basically just, that's the big waste collector is coming through and collecting the bins and bins and bins that you can be awakening with your green juice and raw salads. So if that's happening, then it's a win-win all around, because you're feeling amazing, baby's getting better milk, and then meanwhile, you're getting a head start. You're catching up on preparing your body for the next baby that sounds like, you're inviting in. So, you know, make a really beautiful womb for baby in through doing this too. In terms of candida products, I would say they won't be harmful to take while you're breastfeeding. It depends on what you're taking. If you're taking the, you know, Candex and Candigon, you'll be fine. You could even take what's very effective, what I love now too, is colloidal silver. And that will help eradicate any yeast in the body. All those things are totally safe while nursing. And
Natalia, what's colloidal silver? This
colloidal
is
silver.
You on the scene for me.
Yeah, well, colloidal silver has actually been around forever, and it up until the time that that antibiotics were created, colloidal silver, this is the whole saying, actually brings us back to the family, colloidal silver, the whole saying of, like, being born with a silver spoon in your mouth.
Yeah.
It's because silver, platinum silver, gold, but particularly silver, it leaches the colloids, the little tiny particles of silver, into the liquid. So if this is how it's made. The silver is actually placed into water, and there are these little electrical pulsers that release the silver into the water, and the water collects these little microparticles of silver. And it has this antibacterial, antifungal, anti-parasite, anti-yeast. It's just like this incredible kill-it-off-if-it's-bad kind of one-stop shop. And so this is, it was, like I said, it was around before we had antibiotics, and it was used all the time. And then it kind of disappeared. And as of the last, 10 years or so, it's kind of come back into the health scene, thankfully. But it's one of those things that will eradicate these unwanted little beings in microbes in our bodies. And so you could do that. That would help a lot, too. And those things are all safe. Anything stronger, I would caution you around. But those things are just, over the health food store counter kind of items. And, of course, I should say that's what I would do. It's what I have done. Check with your doctor, right?
Mm-hmm.
Always. So those things are all that would be the approach I would take. And if you're coming off of mainstream dieting and you're not having bowel cleansing and you're wanting to do this theoretical hypothetical detox, that's not going to be nice for you, for your body. You'll just get tired, you'll get cranky, baby will get worser caliber breast milk, worser, is that nice? What's the word? And so that'll be lose-lose. So if you line it up right and you you do everything to the higher order of detoxification, then it will be wonderful.
Okay, and there's no, well, I know, check with your doctor, but in your experience, there's no concern about doing colonics while breastfeeding, correct?
These are completely different regions of the body. It's totally fine. Being pregnant is one thing, but not what Sarah's saying now. And in fact, when you consider your body sharing space with a septic system, a really, really septic system, then, and that your biomass then holding that is just, and that's permeating the entire body, and you're basically this kind of smelly garbage can, and that's making your milk versus all this waste leaving. The quality of the milk is just, it's like the one is Chernobyl fallout, and the other one is like the elixir of the gods. That's the difference.
Wow. Yeah, definitely. It comes up a lot. And so basically, the bottom line is, if you're eliminating through as many channels as possible, that it's definitely more ideal than not doing it, than, staying toxic.
Right.
Basically.
Don't be fearful around breastfeeding. And obviously, the big things that are terrible are all the external pollutions, right? The environmental estrogens and the radiation and the noxious fumes, the gas, the stuff that we smell. I can't even walk outside New York City streets anymore and breathe. If anybody's noticed that there's a really weird smell in New York City, everyone thinks I'm crazy. I can't even talk about this. Even my kids look at me funny when I say this. There's a smell. I don't know if it's chemtrails or some sort of slow biological poisoning or something, but there is a distinct smell in the city. It's rainy today, sun smells today, but every day there's clear blue sky. This is a distinct smell. But see, those things are coming to mind. Those are really harmful. The pharmaceutical drugs that people take, that over-consuming alcohol, there's so many toxic things. Fast food, they should just check with your doctor before you consume fast food while you're breastfeeding.
Oh, my gosh. I know. Oh, my gosh. That was the thing. When I was pregnant, I was like, really? You're telling me not to eat, and maybe this isn't what you should eat, but, fish? But mm-hmm. You're not telling me not to eat, drink Coke, and eat McDonald's?
Mm-hmm.
That makes no sense to me. I was like, where's the mm-hmm. real concern? Where's mm-hmm. the real damage that could be done? That is craziness.
No. But did we get to all the points in our question?
We did, yeah, because you said,
did,
and this is a big question, because the Candida supplement, because on the bottles, they say don't take those while you're breastfeeding. Is it because the milk can become not appealing to the baby because of the herbs that are used in there? Is that
maybe.
Why they say that?
Or maybe they think the herbs might be too intense for the baby
yeah.
if the baby receive them. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't do, like, you know, big doses of them.
Yeah.
But, you know, little bits of those herbs. I mean, look, I did that. I didn't have any issues around it.
Okay.
I'll leave it at that.
Okay. Awesome. We do have a hand raised, so let's see. Bruna.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, Bruna.
Hi, guys. Can you hear me?
Yeah. You know what? There's a little echo. Are you on a headset?
Are you on a headset? Yes. Should I pick it up?
That would be great.
Okay. Right on the phone now.
Awesome.
Okay. So, hi, Natalia. Hi, Amanda. The question that Amanda read, I sent in earlier about, you know, I guess what sticks in my mind is authentic and inauthentic fear. And then I talked about the trust. So I guess this is like the first time in my life that I went back to trace, like, why am I so fearful? And I think it's a huge trust issue, trusting myself, trusting my son that he can keep himself alive, and trusting my husband that he knows what he's doing.
Mm.
Yeah, and this has been kind of huge for me, and, you know, because it traces to my father's death when I was very tiny, when I was 5 years old, and all that, you know, brought up. So I'm now, like, ready to really work on this, and I was wondering if you guys think Natasha Adler or Anita Briggs mm-hmm. would be a better person. Who would be better? Like, you know, it has to do with all this. Father passing away, and I want to bring him back in my life. That's what I just realized now. I have to have him every day of my life with me. I created a separation because when I was a child, I channeled him, and he came. He came to me, and I got totally scared. Any adult I would talk to them about this, they would, of course, not believe me. And so I just stayed in this really lonely place because as a 5-year-old, I did not understand that. I thought he had left. So I think everybody in my life will leave, and I don't trust people because I got extremely hurt once. So and you know, of course, I want to do it differently. And what you guys said already, like, oh, my God, yes, that's the thing. I got to do the work on me, and the fear will feed fear, and I'm not interested in that.
Hmm. Well, thank you so much for giving us all the background. That's, you know, it's really clear where this comes from. And I think it was funny when you first started talking, Natasha popped into my head because I heard what she would say to you in terms of, like, that experiencing happening so young for you means that you are here to work on that theme of trust and also of fear of death. And, you know, so I'm putting words in her mouth, but I feel like that would be one of the things that she would say. She's awesome to work with in terms of identifying those key themes that you are here to resolve, and that, you know, when we're not here on this planet, so many of us, when we're in spirit, we want to be here. We want to come here to work on things. And so it sounds like that's what you're here, one of the big things you're here to work on, especially because it happened so dramatically so early in your life. And it's awesome that you're stepping up right now in this moment. And one of the things that the astrological charts can do is really show you what forces are all coming together in your life right now to help support you in that next shift. And it's so confirming and so And it just, it is so empowering to have the background and to know that it all happened for a reason. You actually chose it. And everyone's willing participants in this play, if you want to call it a play. And so, you know, everyone's doing their part and everyone's playing their role, even your son. You know, he's playing his role right now to say, Mom, you know, this is our chance. Like, this is our chance to heal this theme, not only for you, Mom, but for all of our ancestors, you know, for all of our future generations. Like, this is it. Like, this is your chance. This is your time. You know, so it's beautiful that you're stepping up. I haven't worked with Anita. I know that Natalia has a lot. So I highly recommend Natasha for any work like this. But Natalia would speak to Anita. Anita's her name, right?
Yeah, no, and Anita is wonderful to work with, and I think she's mostly doing courses now, though. So I think I would say Natasha would be a great place to start for the personal aspect of this, and then to do one of Anita's courses as a full upgrade, like as a whole upgrade of your being, but not focus just on one specific issue. Although she does, when people are in her course on Fridays, usually she takes individuals who want to work with her personally through particular issues that they're struggling with, more pinpointed. But it's more about a perspective shift in elevating the whole being, bringing the whole being from chaos to order and then to a higher order with Anita. I would say that I would agree with Amanda. I would say start with Natasha. Get the layout, get the big picture of those sort of forces that you invited into your young life, and help her see, you know, help you see those, understand them.
Yeah, sounds very good. Amanda, you just blew my mind by saying that right when we're energy, not in bodies, we want to come in.
Yeah.
Come in, right? Incarnate.
How about that, huh?
So that's amazing. Yeah, and then when you say, I totally get this, when you say that I chose my father's death, that I totally understand. I have not thought about it that way, but like, I totally understand that we choose everything, every accident we get to, whatever it is, we're choosing.
Mm-hmm. And you know, you can think of it like this.
It gives us more power too.
Totally. Mm-hmm. And when you think about this life being almost like a roller coaster, you know, you get on the roller coaster, you're all excited, and you go up, you go down, you go around. Sometimes you feel like you're going to throw up. Sometimes you're, like, overcome with fear. Sometimes it's just, like, exhilarating. And then the ride stops, and it's like, okay, let's do that again. That's how it is. It's like, you know, we have this life, and it can be so scary, and all these things come up for us. And then when we leave, it's like we can't wait to come back. So, you know, this is our chance to really heal and continue growing, and we're lucky to be here now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the only other thing I would add
to think about.
Yeah. Yeah. The only thing I'll add is that with fear, there's also the reminder that life is precious, and so when we feel fear, whether it's rational or irrational, it's always a good reminder to acknowledge that, wow, life really is precious for everyone who lives it. And that's why the protection that we give our children should be the same protection we give everyone's children, that we give, you know, animals, anyone who can't protect themselves, anyone who needs kind of a mothering or fathering. And life is precious, and we don't need to be, you know, taking life the way we are in our culture. We don't need to be, you know, using living resources for, you know, for these things. And so I think we see our children mixed in with this world that is so careless,
cavalier
about how things are treated, and so we see that our children are actually being thrown into the same system. So maybe our children won't be treated well, and a car will be coming by because you know, the people don't care about their own lives, and they're upset with their girlfriends. They drink, and then they get behind a car. They don't care. They want to, like, you know, run like a wild dog, and you know, it's just because of the consciousness, the communal consciousness is so erratic that it is dangerous, and we all need to start to acknowledge just how precious life is, and adjust our own lives to be to be protective of all life. And when we do that, we'll live in a world where everyone believes that life is precious, so we won't need to be so fearful. But there is kind of a rational fear. It's even our irrational fears because of this kind of disease of life being treated so unkindly and carelessly when it's in fact so precious. And the wild mother in us and the wild father just knows how precious life is and wants to, you know, and so we have to almost act in imbalance, in ways that appear imbalanced because we're having to neutralize the dangers of this, you know, the society.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Not to confuse the issue even more, but there it's nuanced.
No, I totally get it. Yeah, but if I can continue, I don't know if there's anybody else. But I have a question that just popped in my mind. You know, all these fears. And when I hear something that has happened in the world, let's say the most recent thing, the whole shooting at that the Newton School, I kind of freak out. So, actually, my question is, how did you, Amanda, and you, Natalia, like, how did you feel, and where did you go to find strength to, like, reconnect yourself, you know, anchor yourself?
Mm-hmm. I grieve like very deeply when things like that happen. I allow myself to almost, I don't know if this is totally healthy, but it's the process that I have to go through, where I almost like feel the pain of, it makes me cry right now, honestly, of all of the mothers and the fathers that have lost children. And I grieve mostly for the perpetrators because I know like the level of pain and fear and darkness that they're living in. I mean, to do anything like that, it just has to be so bad, you know, so, so bad. And so there's this this grieving process that I go through, and that helps me so much. I've realized so much that crying is this natural, I use the word technology because that's what it feels like for me so much in the body, that crying and sobbing and grieving is a natural, it's a mechanism to help us clear and clean and sort of restart and detoxify. And so I just allow myself to be in that for as long as I need to. And sometimes the people around me understand and sometimes they don't. But I know that that is the process that helps me to then understand so deeply that going into the fear around it will not help anyone. That's exactly what the fear wants me to do, is to then, you know, keep my kids indoors and keep them from enjoying life. And so it's this sort of cathartic process that I go through that then gets me back to the point of the only way to fight fear is in love. The only way for us to, I'll use my own words, create paradise on earth where shootings like this don't happen, is to be in love, to radiate love, to be love. And we don't do that when we're in fear. We can't. You can't. So it's like it gets me back to my purpose, to my own life, to checking what I am feeding, what I am subscribing to. And whenever I start going out there, you know, when I get really, really wrapped up in any of that. That's why I can't watch the news. I mean, things get to me. The things that need to get to me get to me. My dad, who's on the phone. Hi, Dad. You know, people in my life make sure that I know about the really important things, but I don't watch the news, and we don't watch TV. And it's because I know that I'm not functional in an effective and healthy way when I am wrapped up in that. I can't do it. So I don't know if that's helpful, but I just know that...
That's totally helpful. Yep, totally helpful. I the same. I haven't watched TV in 10 years.
Yeah.
Same thing.
Yeah, and there's it's like nothing. we, we, yeah, yeah, we, we can't feed it. We can't feed it because that's what it wants us to do. So it's like, it's a choice. It's a choice. And I think it sometimes can be as simple as that. It's like, I choose, and I've said this on calls a million times because it really is my mantra. It's like, I choose love. I'm not going to go into that. I'm going to choose love. And it's not putting blinders on and pretending like it's not happening. It's knowing that it's happening because it is. And it's not burying your head in the sand and pretending that it's not. But it's knowing what a healthy response, what an effective response to it is, and then choosing that.
Yeah, and also just the confirmation, right? Confirmation that what you're doing, your path, and yeah, that you continue with the choosing love and inspiring others to do the same, right?
Wake up from
the fears and choose love, yeah.
That's it. That's all we can do. That's all we can do.
Yeah.
And eventually, if the more of us are doing that, then these things won't have any food to sustain them. You know, that, you know, it could be many, many lifetimes from now, but why not start now? I don't know why, you know, where are we going? This is what we're here to do. I don't know, Natalia, what do you do?
Well, I certainly, I kind of want to be brutally honest here, but I hesitate because it's such a sensitive subject. But I can't help but be brutally honest. I don't mean to offend anyone who's listening to this at all. I mean, my heart goes out to anyone who's experienced loss of a child, a violent crime of any kind. Of course, it's just inconceivable pain. But I think there's a lot of media manipulation going on. And I don't necessarily believe everything I hear and see on the mainstream media. In fact, I tend to be very, I tend to challenge everything that's presented to me on, you know, any of the major news networks. And when you trace a lot of these things, there's even more confirmation that there's a lot of media manipulation because, you know, the next day they're wanting, you know, the government's wanting to take a new step to remove another one of our liberties. So, you know, the whole sort of, you know, the Second Amendment rights situation that followed this, I just think it's more complicated than that. In this particular case, you know, if we're talking about loss and danger and pain and at large, then I'd say yes, I agree with Amanda. There's this, you know, this grieving process that goes on, and you know, I don't know, you know, how it's some of these things you just are just too painful to bear. And this, if it's true that what was given us in terms of information is true to a T, you know, which it may be, okay, then I would say take it at face value, grieve at face value. If it's not, and we have to be prepared for, you know, the possibility that there's duping going on, then what does that mean? You know, and to what degree does it mean? You know, because we didn't get very much information. The pictures don't show anything. We don't even. I mean, the children that are, you know, it's so complicated. I didn't want to get into it here because it's so messy. But what I will say is that I've put a lot of thought into it. And I've thought through every angle. And so in many ways, it makes me, part of my grieving process, part of my way of contending with this is to become even more vigilant, to not in a way that's dysfunctionally vigilant, not in a way that puts fear on me, but enables me to stay above it, to see very clearly where we may be manipulated so that not only do I not fall prey to any kind of manipulation they want to use to get me to be easy to use as a pawn and part of the mission to take away our constitutional rights, but in a way that, you know, I can be like, okay, I see what's going on there, and you know, and it's like I said, this is a difficult conversation to have. It's very, very nuanced, very complicated. It requires, you know, a particular perspective that, you know, I suppose I've spent many years kind of doing battle with the demons of that initially come up from looking at the world with a more from the conspiratorial perspective, got over that because it can take you into a very negative space, got out of that negative headspace, but still hold the very helpful perspective, the empowering perspective on the whole thing. So in the same way, what I would say to that is, I think it's dangerous to have your kids in public school. I think it's dangerous to do things, anything that's going to be, you know, of course we could say,
but
well, it's dangerous to go.
Maybe not for all the reasons, maybe not because they would get shot, but for a lot of reasons, right, Natalia?
Well, yes, a lot of reasons, but also because they could be shot, also because they could be used as in some sort of, you know, larger, as some sort of larger tool, because there is no protection of life. There's no, life is not seen by the people in the corporations and the government. We know by their choices that life isn't precious. Why do we have GMO foods in this country? Why do we have vaccines? What is the agenda? You know, what are they motivated by? They're not motivated by love. We can't trust. It would be irrational. It would be irrational trust, by contrast, to put trust in the hands of those who are not trustworthy. So I guess what I'm saying is, I look at I look at the event, and then I kind of dismantle it to get to, use my intuition, my ability to discern, to determine what's really going on, and not just accept things at face value. Sorry, that was kind of taking us in a different direction, but
it's not though, because it's the same. It's the same response. It is not going into the fear, whether or not it happened. It's you're choosing in that way to not feed the fear either. Mm-hmm. I mean, because you're looking at it without. If you were in the reaction of fear, you wouldn't be able to look at it with any sort of discernment. Your discernment would be disabled.
Right.
So, I think, Bruna, there's a blog that I wrote called "Our Children Are Not Broken," and it was it's on the Pele Ma TV website. If you go under blog, you can find it's "Our Children Are Not Broken," but it's something that I wrote basically in response to the Connecticut shootings. And it basically, it talks about everything we're talking about here. And maybe it'll be helpful, but Natalia, I mean, it is complicated, and we can simplify it in the sense that fear is always going to feed fear, so we can choose a reaction or choose a response, and we don't have to choose the fearful response, and then that will be able to put us in a perspective that can take apart things that happen and be like, you know, is this true? Is it not true? And whose agenda's here? Who's making money here? Who's gaining more power in this situation? And you can always trace it back to those things.
Right.
Yeah.
For sure. Yeah. Well, thank you very much.
No, thanks so much for bringing that to the party today. Yeah.
That's good stuff,
yeah,
Bruna. Thank you.
Thank you. That helps me tremendously because these issues have just put so much weight on my so, like, I cannot even tell you.
Yeah.
But this makes it lighter, and I have also considered the other side of all everything here. So, thank you so much. Thank you.
Awesome.
But you know, it just shows how much love you have to give. I think when we feel this, and our initial expression is that kind of deep grief, it just goes to show how beautiful the soul of the person who's feeling that deeply for others is. It you know, enables us to see just what our enormous capacity is for interconnected love.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah,
we haven't
just got a mind.
Okay. Thank you, Bruna.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
We have one more hand. I don't know if it means to be raised, so let me just. Lisa, I see that you have your hand raised, but I'm not sure if that was just an accidental button push. Let's see, hold on. Lisa, you have the mic. Okay, she pressed 4, so normally that means that they didn't actually mean to do that.
Okay.
All right, Natalia, well, we answered everyone's questions, and It's been over an hour, so I think it's time to wrap up.
Okay. All right, everyone. Well, thank you for tuning in, and I hope it was of service. And bring all these great questions to us next month. We'll be very interested to hear how you've grown and what's on your mind. If you want to send in some, even if you want to approach categories of topics of discussion, and you want to send those discussion topics our way, we can even open up the floor for a broad discussion like we did today.
Awesome. Yeah, and I just wanted to mention too, Bruna and anyone else who's interested, Natasha will be teaching a class or hosting a backstage pass too. It will be more at the collective level, but for any of you who are interested in working with her a little more deeper, that will be available too.
Yeah, I can't encourage that enough. I mean, you will be so empowered with your. I mean, you know, I've had my private sessions with her, and it's just, you know, anything that can help remove the veils, help us see more clearly, gives us a rush of positive energy, and it puts so much power in our hands. So Natasha does this. Like she really. You're gonna have your life can be elevated, meaningfully. After a session with her. So if you're on the fence, do it.
Yeah, definitely.
And
if you want to get updated for information about when new episodes air, and also for any of the information about the classes or the backstage passes that are going to happen, go to pelema.tv and sign up for Get in the Flow on the right-hand side. There's a little section you can sign up to Get in the Flow and get updated whenever we have things like that happening.
Is Jason going to teach a class too?
He is.
What's
he's going to do for men? It's going to be a series of challenges that help them to get rid of, get beyond their fears and go after what they want to be doing as well. So
that'll be great. I mean, imagine if all the Life Force mamas could have a place to send their Life Force papas.
Exactly. I know. It's going to be good. It's going to be really good.
We should have Jason on the show soon. If he's up for it, to do maybe a focus, and I know we do have some dads listening in, but both sides can ask their questions because
exactly that's what I said to him too. I was like, are you sure you want to teach a class for men? Because I think a class for women would be awesome for them to be able to ask a man, for them to be able to sort of bounce things off. But he wants to work with the guys this time. But he would definitely come on to a Life Force Families Call, no question.
Yeah,
and
let's
this
do that.
Friday. We're airing the second part to the relationship series. We had the one relationship episode.
Yeah.
We have a second one coming on Friday, and it's pretty juicy actually. So it should be a good one. Yeah. Well, one of the topics is it comes down to trust and integrity within self. But the question that Catherine asked us is about what do we do when someone in the relationship is attracted to someone else outside of the relationship, and how do we navigate that that scenario? So this is good stuff.
Wow. Well, I'm curious to hear what you say about that. Okay, I'm sure everyone else is too.
Exactly.
Okay, you guys.
All right.
That's
everybody.
Awesome. Keep doing them. And lots of love to everyone. Bye for now.
Thanks, everyone. Aloha.